All right. Good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining me this beautiful morning in Barcelona. I know it's a bit early, but I appreciate everybody that came out, and I hope that you learn a lot. My name is Patrick Lang. I'm a program manager focusing on the Hyper-V storage stack. And today I'll be talking about how you can deliver predictable storage performance using storage quality of service. This is something that we started in Windows Server 2012 R2, and we've continued to evolve in the technical preview. So just a quick recap. People are building private clouds today where they are trying to run many VMs. And they're running these on a smaller number of hosts. This is how they're achieving consolidation and cost savings. And then they're running even fewer storage resources to service all this stuff. This makes management substantially easier, and it makes ongoing maintenance easier. But at the same time, as you're working down, you're funneling more and more stuff into a single point, which can lead to potential bottlenecks. So today, when you're doing storage management, there's always a balancing act between how much capacity do I have and how much demand am I placing on it. As you deploy more VMs, you're continuing to add more demand. If you add demand too quickly, well, VMs can get choked, workloads start to fall over, and you've got a problem. So you're constantly needing to balance the need for over-provisioning versus over-subscription. So over-provisioning is providing more capacity, but that means a higher cost and a lower average utilization. Oversubscription means that you're trying to provide just enough capacity in order to drive your cost down and maximize the utilization of your hardware. It's a constant cost versus risk equation. So if you're adding capacity to match workload, that's one way you can balance it out by increasing cost. Our goal in storage quality of service is to give you the tools you need to slim workloads down and make them run in a more predictable fashion, regardless of what application. We're achieving this at the virtual machine level by being able to apply consistent policies as needed to keep your storage demand and capacity in balance. So for today, I'm going to start on giving you the skills needed to monitor your storage performance and start to identify trouble signs that would show you which VMs are being bottlenecked. Then I want to show you the different capabilities within storage quality of service and help you set the right strategy for your deployments. And by doing this, you'll be able to deliver predictable performance in your private cloud. All right, so I'm going to start off with storage performance monitoring. So there's two different views that I want to be sure to cover. The first one is the view from within the virtual machine. This is what your customer sees. And then I'm going to go into the view from the host. So that way, without access to the VM, you can identify how the virtual machine is performing, look at all the virtual machines at once, and start to decide how you want to deploy policies. Okay, so right now I'm moving over to my demo machine, which is now up, and I'm giving an example of performance counters running in one of my virtual machines. So this one is currently running a workload that is basically building code in a loop. This is something that someone might do on a developer desktop. And I'm using the Windows Performance Monitor and the counters provided by the physical disk provider. Within here, some of the things that are important to look at is your queue lengths, your transfers per second, and your seconds per read. So the queue length is basically showing how many operations are pending. And I'll recommend some thresholds on those in a minute. This next one is my latency. That's the average response time to those storage requests. And so these two are averages, and then you can also get the immediate non-smooth results. And then the disk transfers per second is the number of storage instructions that have been run in the last second. And on a desktop workload, this is something that is going to be changing very rapidly with time. So on the host, we actually have counters available that are provided by the Hyper-V virtual storage provider. So for all the virtual machines running on any given host, you can easily see this same data all in one place. So here I'm graphing the same queue lengths for all of my running VMs, and I can see this on a per virtual disk basis. So those numbers should line up with what you're seeing in the VM. Yeah, so as I mentioned, be sure to watch the queue length and the latency. And then I also mentioned a new performance counter called normalized throughput that is going to be helpful as you are sizing your policies for storage quality of service later. So let me help you put some of these counters into perspective. So queue depth, on average, is a very good indicator of how much a VM is being impacted by storage bottlenecks. Desktop workloads are something that vary rapidly. If you launch something like Outlook and do a search, you're going to issue a whole lot of I/O all at once, but then that's going to complete and it'll be idle. So you will see frequent spikes in queue depth, but on average, it should be pretty low, down in the single digits. If you're seeing a desktop with a much higher queue depth, then the user's probably spending more time waiting, and then that's also going to be raising the average latency. So 25 milliseconds is a good place to look, a good starting threshold to look at that a lot of admins use. And of course, if you have a server workload, you're probably going to see much more sustained load. This is normal. 16 is a pretty good target for something that's doing constant processing, and you really don't want to see much above 32 based on recommendations for SQL Server, for example. And then the new metric that we've introduced starting in Server 2012 R2 is what we call normalized throughput. That's being used to track the overall cost for metering and quality of service purposes. So normalized IOPS are the number of input and output operations per second, but it's adjusted for size. We're using 8K as our normalizing factor here. So that means any operation 8K or less will count as one. Anything above that will simply be divided by 8. This is something that we've made available both in the performance counters, as I just showed, as well as in a new feature called VM Metrics that was added in 2012 R2. And this is also used by Storage Clause. So next I'm going to go ahead and show you how VM Metrics work. So this is something that can be used to provide accounting for CPU, memory, network, and disk utilization. This was originally developed to support what we call chargeback scenarios, where you can measure the resources used by any VM and then bill accordingly. One of the key differences between metrics and performance counters is that metrics are actually monitored by the Hyper-V service itself, and they're persisted in the VM configuration file. That means that they can be preserved across all VM state changes. If the user reboots their VM, or if it's migrated from one host to another, you don't lose any of those transactions. You're still accounting for all of them in your VM metrics. All right, so now I'll show a quick example of how this actually works. So there's four commandlets that are used to enable VM resource monitoring. Measure shows you how much resources have been used until this point in time. Reset zeros that out, and then of course you can disable metering afterwards. Okay. Oh, I forgot to mention earlier, all of our performance counters are always available in PowerShell as well as in the UI. Most of this demo I'll be focusing on PowerShell because that gives you the tools you need to automate things. Okay, so now I'm going to show how to track usage with metrics. So I have 5 VMs running right now. Each one's using a different amount of storage. So the first thing I'm going to do is enable resource metering for 2 of my VMs. I have build VM1 and test VM with different requirements. So I'm enabling metering on both of those. I'll wait about 10 seconds for it to collect some data. And now I'm going to go ahead and collect those metrics using measure VM. So once it's enabled, I can call measure VM at any time to get the current usage. And then I'm going to go ahead and display that. So what I have here is for each VM, the default view of the metrics is going to show you the average RAM, CPU, disk, and so on. But you can drill down into each virtual disk that's available. And here's where you can actually get information such as the average normalized IOPS over the monitoring period, the total amount of data read and written, the average latency. This is actually in kind of a strange unit. What we have here is 25.5 milliseconds, and then the total number of normalized IOs over this period of time. So if you want to know how much storage bandwidth the VM is using over a period of time, just enable resource monitoring, run it for 24 hours, maybe 1 hour, whatever period you want, look at the average, and that'll give you a good idea for comparison between different VMs. And now I'm going to go ahead and disable that because I don't need it for the rest of the demo. So just to recap, that's how you can use metrics to track your utilization with time. And we have a new normalized I/O count, which is something that's going to be important in the next slides. So just to quickly recap the monitoring approaches, you have both performance counters that can be used for getting individual data from each host, for each VM, for each VHD, and that can give you a place to look for VMs that are currently, you know, maybe struggling for some bandwidth. And then VM metrics can be used for measuring and planning purposes because they monitor over time. So now let's move into how to actually implement storage quality of service. So in Windows Server 2012 R2, we brought in the initial version of storage quality of service, which could be applied to each VHD. You may have seen this in the Hyper-V settings UI, and I'll bring that up in a minute. But this is also where we started implementing metrics. And the key benefits that this provides is using limits, you can go ahead and start mitigating the impact of noisy VMs now. Before the session, I was talking to a couple gentlemen and saying, you know, if you don't have any reason for a VM to be consuming 25,000 IOPS, why not just set a limit proactively? That'll help avoid that from creating a burst of traffic later that may not be necessary and reduce the impact to your storage system. So setting a default limit might be a great thing to do, even if it's pretty high, because you can always revise it down later. And this happens at the Hyper-V level, independent of what kind of storage you're running on. All right, so switching back over to the demo environment, I'm going to go look at one of my VMs that's running a pretty substantial storage workload. So this is IO meter using an online transaction processing benchmark. And currently, it's consuming over 10,000 IOPS. So in R2, and also still there in the technical preview, we have this advanced features tab that has the early version of storage quality of service management in it. And that's where I can go ahead and define the maximum here. So I'm going to go ahead and define that and just say, I'll limit that to 2,000. OK. And now the Hyper-V host is throttling that down immediately. Now we're at 2,000. And of course, this can also be managed through PowerShell. Everything we do in Hyper-V is always there in PowerShell, so you can automate it. So first thing I'm doing is just doing a quick query so I can see what settings are currently applied to the virtual machine. And then I'm going to go ahead and change that. So I just set a new max of 5,000. And if I go back to the VM, we'll see that that took effect immediately. Now it's running at just under 5,000. And then, of course, if I want to turn the setting off, I can just set that back to zero. And the limit is gone. All right, so now I'm back up to 8,000 on the way to 10. Maybe it'll hit 12 in a few more minutes here. So that's how limits work on 2012 R2. It's a great feature. You should consider using it today just to provide some more predictability in your deployments before you move on to the next version of Windows. Yeah, so what I just demonstrated was what I call the reactive approach. I went and looked at the performance counters on the VMs. I sorted them by normalized IOPS, and I saw some VMs were using more than I wanted, so I went ahead and applied something. I mean, you could take this approach to resolve an immediate issue, but I really recommend being more proactive and actually looking at all the VHDs and applying a limit when you're running on R2. And you could always raise this later if needed. So if you've got a particular customer or particular admin that needs more bandwidth, go ahead and raise it at that time. And just to give you some rough examples, for things like desktop workloads, you know, running something in the low 100 IOPS would be fine. Oftentimes, I'll run closer to 500 for more general workloads. And then wherever I need more performance, I'll push it up as high as I can. I've got a number of things where we do transaction processing at, of course, you know, tens, maybe 100,000 IOPS. And this scales fine up to those levels as well. All right, so moving on. The rest of the talk, I'm going to be focusing on some of the new features that we're developing in Windows Server Technical Preview. So this is just the first step in a long journey. The Technical Preview was released back in early October, but you know this is something that we're going to continue evolving over time. So I would like everyone to go ahead and start looking at it. And be sure to join us on the technical preview forums if you have feedback in this area. We want to hear from you. We want to know what's working and what isn't. So our goal in the technical preview was to make managing storage easier by bringing more automation to it. So just a little while ago, I was showing how to use performance counters and metrics, which was a relatively intensive task. I had to go to each VM. I may have had to follow down to individual virtual disks just to understand what's going on. The first thing we did was make everything easier to monitor. The metrics from all of the virtual machines are now available directly on your scale-out file server where all your shared storage resides. Now that all the metrics are there, we also make it easier to manage because we're able to improve the fairness of storage resources across all the virtual machines, even if they're spanning across multiple hosts. And because we have this central monitoring and throttling, we can now provide policies in one central location. So you create all of your policies in one place, and then you just tell your VM what policy you want. You can, and this is also flexible. You could do it on a per virtual machine basis. You could do it on a group of virtual machines, maybe everything belonging to one of your private cloud tenants, maybe a specific business division, or maybe even something smaller like a cluster. Let's say I want a particular cluster to have a given storage allocation, but I don't care which VM is using the IOPS. That's something that's possible. And also, since it's centralized on the storage server, it's very effective in our shared storage deployments. And that allows us to continue to meet the storage service level agreements even as the demands are changing dynamically. So we were able to achieve this through some joint work with Microsoft Research out of Cambridge. There's a group there called Predictable Data Centers, whose mission is to provide customers with predictable performance in shared cloud environments. Some of their early research was focusing on network quality of service, and a lot of their findings were put into Windows Server 2012 and R2 to improve the network capabilities. And then they've continued to investigate storage performance, and they've actually given a couple presentations over at the Storage Developer Conference, and these are published for anyone to view. But based on their recommendations, we changed the way that the storage quality of service feature worked for the technical preview. So the approach that they came up with was to build a system that's dynamic. It's always measuring the current capacity. So this is based on the real-world usage, which is changing with time, applying a new algorithm that they call max-min fair sharing in order to meet all of the policies that are in effect. And then once they've decided how all of your storage capacity should be used by the virtual machines, we communicate that back to the Hyper-V hosts, which allows them to adjust all of the rates directly at the source. So that means we're not buffering anything before it goes to the file server. We're buffering it all the way there. So the VM is aware how much capacity it has and applications can respond correctly. There's no caching magic here, no double buffering. This is just keeping everything in line as fast as possible, but predictable. And that allows us to always be able to respond to changing demand. So this is just a continuous cycle that is running all the time on the scale-out file server. So how did we build this? The first thing we did was we put a policy manager on the scale-out file server cluster itself. This is where the policies are stored. This is where the metrics are stored. And then we put an IO scheduler on all of the storage nodes. So a scale-out file server cluster can handle multiple clients from any node. So every single one of the cluster nodes is running the IO scheduler, and we're distributing that data across them back to the policy manager. The policy manager makes decisions based on the process I mentioned earlier, and then pushes those configurations back up to the rate limiters that are running on the Hyper-V nodes dynamically. So this is something that's just always running in the background, always tuning your performance every couple of seconds. So the first benefit this gets you is storage quality of service monitoring. So this is something that's enabled by default. As I mentioned, it shows the usage for all the VMs, and we can see the VM name, the unique identifier for that VM, which we call the VM ID, the host, IOPS latency, as well as any policy that's configured. So moving back over to my demo deployment, I currently have a 3-node file server cluster running with the scale-out file server role deployed. And then if I look at the main cluster itself, we can actually see that there is this new resource running for the storage quality of service policy manager. So I'm showing this because it's a clustered resource. It's highly available. If whichever node is running as the policy manager fails, that's fine. It'll just fail over to another node. So it's always available, always tuning the performance. And then I also have 3 different Hyper-V servers deployed, which are not clustered. They're not communicating with each other at all. So I have 5 VMs running on this machine, and I'll go ahead and start an extra one up on another machine, just for an example here. So because this is an early release, we've built everything in PowerShell first. The System Center Virtual Machine Manager team is going to be implementing management and monitoring for this feature. And that'll be mentioned in one of the later talks on storage, hybrid storage management that's being presented by Hector Linares tomorrow. So the first thing I'm going to show is how to actually monitor the current utilization. So we do this using a commandlet called get storage quality of service flow. And I can even filter this down to specific VMs. So first I'm going to show all the data that's available for a single VM. So within here, we can see the initiator ID is the VM ID, initiator name, which is the VM name. I also have the node name, which is the Hyper-V node that's running the virtual machine. And then I can see the number of IOPS and the latency observed by this VM. And that's currently in, I believe, nanoseconds. We're going to fix this formatting very soon, so that way it's in milliseconds. So that shows all the data that's there, as well as if any policy is applied in terms of minimum and max IOPS and the policy ID, which is currently 0 because I don't have one defined. So to make things a bit easier, since I'm using such a huge font, I've actually done a custom formatting that I'll be using for the rest of the presentation, so that way I can see the columns that I want in a quick table view. This is something that'll be shared on the site if you want to use it. So this current status function is calling get storage quas flow, but just giving me a format that's easier to talk to. So I can easily see all of the virtual machines that are running, the hosts they're running on. We see that we've got 2 different hosts here, and currently 6 different VMs. One of them has 2 VHDs. And I can see the current utilization of each of these. This is automatically averaged over the last 5 minutes. That way you're not looking at just a single spike in performance. That way you're getting a more reasonable view of what each VM is doing. That way you can sort it and manage it as needed. And so this is all, you know, centralized right on the file server cluster. All right, so now I'm going to show how to actually develop and deploy storage quality of service policies. So the first thing we do is actually create the policies, and this is done on the file server cluster. I'll be doing it using PowerShell remoting just to make things easier. I love PowerShell remoting. So first you create a policy, and that contains a name, minimum, maximum IOPS, as you see fit. That's stored on the policy manager. You can create as many policies as you need, currently up to 10,000. And then you go ahead and deploy them or apply them to your virtual machines, virtual hard disks. You could do this on a per VHD level, or you could do it on a per VM or group of VMs level. And then once that's done, the rest is automatic. So what's in a policy? Well, the first thing is we've got a friendly name, you know, for you to look at. This can be anything. It doesn't even have to be unique. Whenever you create a policy, we always create a policy ID as a unique key. If you want to be using the same policy on multiple clusters, you can basically just copy the policy ID to the other server along with the other fields, and then you can migrate a virtual machine back and forth from one cluster to another with no change. This is something that will be in scope for Virtual Machine Manager. And then the actual policy configurations are the minimum IOPS, the maximum IOPS, and these are, again, 8K normalized IOPS. And then there's a policy type, which can be either single or multi-instance. So the difference between single and multi-instance is in how the IOPS are distributed between them. So a single instance policy means that this is one policy. If I apply it to multiple things, like two different VMs, the resources behind that policy will be distributed among them. So if I've got a policy where my max IOPS is set to 200 and I apply it to VMs, I may see a distribution of 100 per VM if they're producing equal demand. But because this is dynamic, if one VM is producing more demand than the other, then that will be adjusted on the fly, but it will never exceed that 200 maximum. A multi-instance policy is what you would want to use if you want to basically create like a service tier. So let's say I've got a bronze level that's going to have 200 maximum IOPS. Let's say that's an offering I want to sell to a customer. A multi-instance policy lets me create one policy, but I can apply it to many VMs, and each VM gets its own discrete allocation of that size. So going by the same example, each of these VMs would get up to the max 200 IOPS. So that's the difference between single and multi-instance. Okay, so there's four different types of approaches that you can really do when you're deploying policies. And it's based on how you're using the min and max IOPS. So you can have minimums only, you can have max only, and you can have them equal, and you can have them unequal. I'll show you what each one of those does. So the first thing I'm going to do is show you the behavior that's similar to 2012 R2, which is maximum only. So when I'm using only a max, which means the minimum is set to zero, there's no guaranteed minimum performance, but we do weight all of the virtual machines roughly equally. So as demand changes, we'll be sure to give capacity to each one, and that will reduce the amount of variability in your performance when compared with no policy at all. So this also gives you the ability to basically reserve capacity for later. So if you know your system is capable of 250,000 IOPS and you're only giving 500 IOPS per VM, you could easily calculate how much extra capacity you have left. So let me go ahead and show this one in action. Okay. All right, we're live. So the first policy I'm going to do is create one for that SQL workload that I have running. and I'm going to go ahead and make that a multi-instance in case I want to apply it to more VMs later, and I'll just set a maximum of 5,000. So this first step, new storage cost policy, is creating the policy on the file server cluster, and then I'm going to go ahead and apply it to my VM using the script here. So this commandlet isn't in the technical preview right now, but we have scripts published that you can use to apply these two virtual machines. I'll have a link to that later. So I'm going to go ahead and apply that. And then I'm also going to create a policy for my desktop VMs with a lower maximum of just 500. So I've created the policy, and now I'm applying that to the VMs. So while that's applying, I'm going to go look at the storage performance for all of these. That's the right one. So we can see the desktops still have the variable workload. They're still running. And now the SQL Server 1 is banging up against 5,000 IOPS per the limit, and these other ones aren't exceeding the 500 that's defined there. And since those policies are created, they'll now be visible when I query for the flows on the storage server itself. So since they're active, we can see the minimum and max IOPS that are being applied, and we can also see that that's been affecting the average IOPS here. And then the other thing I can do is get storage quas policy, and I can also enumerate the policies that I've created on the file server already. So that way, if I want to recall one for later use, that's easy to do. So that's a maximum only policy. So the next type of policy that I'd recommend using is actually setting the minimum to the maximum. If you want to deliver the most consistent performance to VMs, let's say you're a service provider and you want to say, I'll sell you 500 IOPS or I'll sell you, 1,000, this is probably the approach that you will want to use because it allows very clear performance tiers to customers. And then if you're over capacity, you'll still get as close as you can, but we've got a monitoring environment so you can see when things are out of the service level agreement. So I have a graph here shown over time, and we can see that even though these VMs have varying demand, by limiting them to 100, it really smoothed out their utilization over time. And I'm going to go ahead and actually apply that. So once you've created a policy, you can actually modify it. This is done by simply recalling the policy object, and then I can call set storage quas policy on it. If I do this, I don't need to reassign it to the VMs. So I'll go ahead and set a minimum and a maximum to 200 and save that. So I'm going to give it a few seconds to respond and then recall that. And now we can see that all the VMs that were running that desktop policy now have the min and max equal to 200. The average IOPS is still higher because, remember, that covers the last 5 minutes where they had a limit of 500. But if I go to the storage performance counters for the instantaneous status, I can see that all of these are nice and equal, averaging around 200. Well, that average is going longer than that. But the instant usage is in the 200 range when it's demanding it. Okay, so the next type of policy is basically putting some gap in between the minimum and the maximum. So this still allows you to give VMs a minimum performance when they demand it, but allow them to burst up to a higher maximum. So the net result is that you get a more variable performance in there. With a lot of applications, that can actually improve your throughput compared with the previous one. But the downside to this is, just if you've got a max of 200 and there's excess capacity, customers may come to expect that. If you're a service provider, you may want to give them a very consistent experience that doesn't change from one day to another. So that would be a case where you might set min equal to max. But if you want to create a gap in performance, especially if you're an enterprise user or if you're just rolling this out, creating this gap is a very good way to start to deploy your policies, because you're giving them more throughput than they had before, but you're still mitigating the impact against other workloads because that maximum is enforced. So now I'm going to go ahead and keep working with that same policy, but actually change it to a minimum of 100 and a max of 200, and then save that. All right, and now I'll query the current status, and we see that for the VMs using that policy, they're back in the 1 to 200 range. And then let's see how they're performing now. So they're still hitting that 200 limit, but they are still exceeding that max of 100. So in this, for this particular workload, it didn't cause a huge difference. But that's how you can create that gap. So the last way I could approach this problem is say, you know, let's say I don't really care what the maximum is, but I do want to guarantee some minimum. This is good because let's say you just have some VMs that you want to make sure have a lot of bandwidth available. You can set a min, but no max, and what you're going to get is you'll have that nice minimum performance, but you'll have a lot of variability above it. In this example here, I was running a whole bunch of the build workload VMs, which have a really bursty traffic pattern. So we could see that they were able to benefit because whenever there was a real big peak in demand, the system was responding to that, but it was still preventing them from starving each other out because that minimum was in place. So if you're trying to get the highest overall utilization of your system but meet some minimum level of performance, this is a great way to do it. Okay, so I'm going to set a minimum of 100 and a maximum of 0, and then save that, and we'll see how that's going. Okay, so that's applied as expected with the minimum. And let's see how that affected the performance. And for this one, I'm actually going to bring up a slightly different view because I want to graph this one over time. Okay, so now that we're running with that minimum of 100 in place, if I follow any individual VM, I can actually see that real dramatic variation in the performance. So there is one major drawback to this approach that I forgot to mention on this slide, and that is because you're never setting an upper limit on there, as you deploy more and more things on the system, you will see a gradual decline in average performance as load increases. And that's just because we're distributing those IOPS fairly across more VMs. So if you want the performance to be more predictable, it would be good to go ahead and have that range, like on the previous slide, with both a min and a max set. But if you're looking for the absolute max performance, this is a good option to have available. So all the examples I showed you so far have been basically assigning a policy to a single VM, and those were all done through multi-instance policies. Single instance policies are are great when you want to basically carve out an allocation and split it across multiple VMs. So I can create one policy that provides the overall min and max, apply it to all the VMs. In this case, I'm going to say all of those desktop VMs belong to the same tenant. I'll put them in the same policy. And then we'll see that the storage quality of service policy manager will continue to adjust their allocations on demand. Okay, so I still have this graph going here, but I'm going to go ahead and change the policy here. So the first thing I'm doing is creating a new single instance policy to represent this tenant. And I'm going to set a min and a max of 1,000. You can't convert between single and multi-instance policies, so I'm creating a new one here. We keep those separate because they're calculated in different ways. So now that the policy is created, I'm going to apply it to all of those build VMs. Give it a few seconds, and then we'll see that that's being applied. Okay, so even though we set the limit to 1,000 overall for the tenant, the system has automatically gone and subdivided that between the VMs based on the demand. So let me just run this a couple more times here so we can see that actually changing. So based on the last couple seconds, this is always going to be readjusting between those VMs. And if I look at my performance graph, we see that for the monitored period, it's allowing the capacity to be dynamically moved back and forth between them. So this is a great way if you have either an active-active cluster but you may still have uneven distributions. This is a great way to say, I need this many IOPS for the cluster, so I'll just create one policy, apply it to both of them. Or let's say I'm bringing a new tenant or business division on board to my private cloud, and I want to just give them a fixed allocation. We'll let them use as many VMs as they want. This is exactly how you would do that. And then, of course, I can still see what policies are available here as well. And so now that I've got the system running pretty well, I'm going to go ahead and throw some more workloads on it. So I have three servers available here. So I'm going to go ahead and start some more VMs. And I'm storing VMs on two separate servers here. So those are currently starting up. So as I'm bringing those VMs up, I want to point out that I never configured a policy for them. So they're currently using zero, but they are placing some demand on the system. But if I go and look at the IOPS that I've reserved for this tenant, I'm still able to hit that minimum that I configured. So even though I have other things that don't have any policy configured, we're still reserving all of that bandwidth up front to make sure that the VMs that have a policy defined are getting their fair share. And this will constantly adjust itself over time. So right now I'm pushing a lot of workload on the system, but those VMs are still working in a very predictable fashion within those policies. And then, of course, over here, it's pretty consistent. Even though I've added load without policies, it's still running great. So if I can create policies for a tenant, what happens if they have a VM that is more important than the others? Well, we actually support that through what we call child policies. So if I have a single instance policy that I've created for my tenant, where I've carved out a particular allocation, I can actually further subdivide that by making a child policy. So let's say one of these VMs is more important than the others. So I'll go ahead and give it a minimum of 500 just for itself, but let it burst all the way up to the max that's allowed for that tenant. So this basically means you can build a hierarchy of policies that's very, very flexible. So in order to create a sub-policy here, it's still a single instance policy, but I've defined what the parent policy is. The parent policy is the one I created for that tenant workload, and then I've set the minimum and maximum on that. So I create the policy and apply it to the virtual machine. And now that that's applied, let's go ahead and check the status. I'm going to give that a few more seconds there. Looks like I may have messed up my script, but okay, so here we can see where the policy is defined, and then if I query that, I can see what the parent policy is as well. So this is how you can basically subdivide and give things on an individual basis as needed. So that's sort of the last option that we have available in terms of creating the policies. So because you can set min, max, and nest policies, you can really think about how you want to be using the storage in your business and come up with a solution that works for you. So we have this in the Windows Server technical preview today because we would love your feedback on it. I would love to know what type of policies you're creating, whether you're using tiers with multi-instance policies, whether hierarchies make sense to you, or what the right approach is and what you'd like to see. To start evaluating this, we've actually put together a step-by-step deployment guide that actually walks you through many of the same steps that we've covered today. And then, as I mentioned, we're missing a PowerShell commandlet on the Hyper-V host, but we have a WMI script, a PowerShell script available that can manage that for you. And the guide shows you exactly how to use this. This is something that will be built into a future preview release coming out as we continue to polish the implementation. And if you're looking for an overview of all of the storage features that we have in the Windows Server technical preview, be sure to check out Jose's blog that has the storage survival guide. It has the step-by-step guides for all the new features, as well as links to the scripts and other updates and known issues as they're being reported and documented. So just to close on the capabilities for storage quality of service in the preview, we provide a very simple out-of-the-box behavior that allows you to monitor the performance of all your virtual machines in a shared storage environment. So the metrics are gathered automatically. We provide a very flexible and customizable framework for developing storage policies that will let you apply things on a per VHD, per VM, service, or tenant level, however you see fit. That consists of minimum and maximum IOPS, and then we dynamically respond to this by creating a fair distribution within each policy. Today, this is managed in the preview using PowerShell, and I'll be sharing that script out. And this is something that will be managed and monitored through VMM and Operations Manager soon. And if you want to know more about what's coming up, especially in VMM, be sure to check out Hector's talk tomorrow at 3:15 p.m. He'll be going over storage management through VMM in general, but he'll also be giving a preview of some of the future directions they're taking there. So with all that, I hope you have the tools to use the storage preview to monitor storage performance, start identifying trouble signs, be able to use the right strategy to deploy storage quality of service in your environment, and allow you to deliver predictable performance in your private cloud. So, and I have some more recommended sessions here as well for other topics. If you want to know more about actually building scale-out file servers, if this is your first time, be sure to check out the talk coming up from Klaus, because he'll be going over all the building blocks in very great detail. And then we have some other exciting new features coming up in VMM as well. So these are just some great storage sessions coming up for the rest of the week. With that, I'd like to go ahead and open up the floor for questions. Sure, go ahead.
Other shared storage?
Let me repeat the question. So the question is, will it be available for other local shared local and shared storage?
Yes.
So the features that were there in 2012 R2 are still there and work well for local storage. If I wanted to like subdivide my storage bandwidth on a laptop, that's a great way to do that, and you can actually do that even before the technical preview. But for the technical preview, this does require the scale-out file server role. So without that running, you're not going to have the policy manager that can deploy these policies, because we need that common two-way communication between them, and that's not something that we can do directly between compute nodes today.
Okay, but this is for technical preview, but in the final product, if I don't use a scale-out cluster, so other vendors for shared storage,
yeah,
will it be possible to use VM monitoring or this?
Were you talking about the metrics, or were you talking
metrics,
about
metrics? We enable VM metrics.
The metrics work on all storage today, regardless of what type you're using, both in R2 and the preview. But the new policies that I showed do require the scale-out file server. We'd like your feedback if you'd like to use that in other deployments, but I can't make any specific commitments at this time. So we're building it for scale-out first. Yes, I got another question back there.
Would it be possible, if you have a multi-tiered storage solution with SSDs and normal disks, to use policies to actually move data from SSDs to normal disks, or the other way?
Yeah. Okay. So in regards to storage tiering, all the demos I did were actually running on a tiered environment. So this works along with the storage spaces tiering that is already available today. Through storage spaces and the scale-out file server role, we don't create a separate policy per tier. So in order to hit those high IOPS that I have, I actually have an SSD tier deployed. This particular demo environment only has six spindles, but I also have an SSD tier there in the storage space. So with all that, I'm pushing 10 to 20,000 IOPS, no problem. And this is on just desktop class hardware. On my server grade stuff, you can push it much higher.
Okay, thank you.
Would it be beneficial to use like Hyper-V-based QoS as well as storage QoS?
Oh, that's a great question, and I probably should have mentioned that. So in order to apply a policy, you have to remove the limits that were there previously. So they're currently mutually exclusive. But you could pick which one you want to use on a per VM basis. That's also very helpful, because as you're upgrading from 2012 R2 to the technical preview, you can actually do this online. So you can start off with the R2 style limits, and then once you've updated your file server cluster to the technical preview functional level, then you can go ahead and create and apply policies instead.
So if you use QoS as you've described and you're using NetApp storage, for example, would it be beneficial to also enable QoS on the NetApp as well as?
Oh, okay, so.
Yeah, that's what I meant, sorry.
Oh, okay, got it. So if there's some QoS being done at lower layers, that's managed separately from this. So that's something you would probably need to work with your storage vendor to see what the best recommendation is there. So we're releasing this early in the technical preview so people can start looking at those type of interactions, and we'd love to hear your feedback on it. I've got a question up at the front.
You talked about a scale-out file server. What about a classic file server, like a continuous awareness cluster or something like that? Is it no problem to use it?
So Hyper-V over SMB is generally recommended on the scale-out file servers because we get that continuous availability. So if you look at the support statements for Hyper-V over SMB, they say you need the continuous availability. So if you have a standalone, then that's not something we recommend for production.
No, not a standalone system, but not a... we need a classic file server with classic SMB, not for Hyper-V and not for virtualization. So, but we also need the quality of service for the storage. Mm-hmm. So is it possible?
Yeah, we get to that. Did you want to answer that one, Sid?
Oh, I do it without CSV.
Okay.
With
yeah,
the traditional file server.
So could you repeat that?
Yeah, I think the question is, I mean, would storage costs work with a traditional file server without a CSV? Is that the question? Yeah. So like on NFS or iSCSI without CSV.
Yeah. So at this point, we're relying on the cluster service for that. So if you don't have a cluster, it's not the policy manager will not be running today. If you're testing in pre-production, you could actually deploy a single node cluster. That's not recommended for production, but it gets the service up and running.
I don't see us having any specific dependencies on CSV. I think it's more of a matter of also us having tested this with scale-out file server, which has CSV underneath. And so at this point, I mean, for traditional file server, we can take that question offline and have a chat on that. Yeah.
Okay.
If you're using this with the storage tiering, how does that affect what gets moved to the hot blocks and what doesn't?
So the tiering algorithm is still independent. I mean, I suppose if you had a relatively low limit on something, then that might cause things to move to a lower tier just because the overall utilization is lower. In this case, I initially optimized all the stuff before enabling tiering in order to get the most throughput from my system and then backed off from there. That's just what I did when I was developing the demos. But if you give a higher allocation to a VM and the tiering is needed to get there, after the tiering optimizer runs some time, it should start moving the right blocks into place. But my expectation is if you've got some VMs with a relatively low allocation that can be serviced by the lower tier, you may not even see them move up. But no, that's a great question. So.
Could you perhaps elaborate a bit more on typical workloads in combination with IOPS? Because in our situation, we thought a typical minimum would be 200 IOPS, for example, for a disk, but that resulted in really sluggish performance, a throughput of 1 megabyte per second.
And
perhaps you could explain it a bit more.
Yeah. So you're looking for recommendations for like default policies? or typical tiers?
I'm really talking about workloads because in our initial thoughts about IOPS, we thought, well, a typical disk is, let's say, 1 or 240 IOPS for a SAS disk, for example. Yeah. That results in some kind of performance. But if we use that information and we place it on a VM, we notice that it's a different kind of performance, you know, because if we put 200 IOPS on a VM, we get about a throughput of 1 megabyte per second. So there must be some kind of conversion or some kind of metrics that we are interpreting wrong. So could you elaborate on that a bit more?
Okay. Yeah. So I think that's due to the IOP normalization that I mentioned. Because we're trying to account for both small and large I/O, we're treating anything larger than 8K as multiple IOPS for bandwidth throttling purposes. So you may need to just raise those up a bit more. So if you're doing something like a sequential copy, that might be using 64 or 128K blocks. So that may be the discrepancy that you're seeing. So, I mean, my advice there is look at how the workload is performing and consider adjusting the policy as needed. For things that are, you know, more bandwidth intensive, then you may need to just go ahead and raise that up to account for the normalization. So it's really something that you have to just, you know, constantly profile before you deploy and then figure out what's going to keep your application getting the number of transactions you need. So. All right. Well, so thanks again, everyone, for coming. I'll be around for the next few minutes for more questions. And also, I'll be at the booth most of the day tomorrow and a little bit this morning if you've got questions on quality of service or just Hyper-V in general. And we'll have a couple other experts at the booth as well. So thank you, everyone, for coming, and enjoy the rest of your stay.